Petitioner in this case asks the court to rewrite the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act to immunize a former Somali government official accused of torture, execution, and other atrocities who has lived in the United States for over a decade. He urges this rewriting of the statute over the objection of the executive branch, which has for over 20 years insisted that the FSIA applies only to foreign states, state-owned entities, and similar non-natural entities. This interpretation of the statute is wrong for several reasons. First, there's nothing in the language of the statute or the statutory history to indicate that Congress ever considered that the FSIA would cover individual government officials. In fact, a long list of provisions, such as those governing service and personal jurisdiction, make no sense if applied to individuals. In fact, the personal jurisdiction provisions would probably be unconstitutional as applied to individuals. Where Congress intended particular provisions of the statute to apply to natural persons, such as in the cause of action under the state sponsors of terrorism exception to immunity, in those cases, Congress was very clear and used specific language to apply to natural persons. In the absence of any statutory basis for holding that foreign government officials are immunized by the Act, petitioner argues that the court should assume that Congress intended to include government officials because he claims at the time the FSIA was enacted, both U.S. common law and international law granted such immunity, and Congress intended to codify pre-existing law. But this argument contradicts the plain language of the statute. It also misstates the reasons for which the statute was enacted, which was to codify the restrictive theory of immunity and specify its application to state-owned enterprises. In addition, this interpretation of Congress's presumed intent is not accurate. The common law in effect at the time the statute was enacted was not uniform. Specialized immunities protected diplomats, consular officials, representatives of some international organization, and heads of state. Foreign government officials also benefited from immunities in cases in which the real party in interest was the state, such as suits to enforce contracts to which the foreign state was a party. Aside from those generally accepted categories of immunity, there were just a handful of scattered cases with contradictory results. In some, foreign officials received immunity, in some they did not. There's no basis for concluding that there was a clear rule in either U.S. common law or international law that every foreign government official sued for an act committed while he was in office as a government official was therefore entitled to immunity. Far less is there any reason to assume that Congress intended to incorporate the so-called rule into the FSIA. Third, even if the FSIA did apply to some acts committed in an official capacity, it would not apply to acts of torture and summary execution, such as those alleged in this case. In the Ninth Circuit, for example, the cases have clearly recognized a limited government immunity in cases in which the government official was actually protecting the interests of the state. But the Ninth Circuit refused to extend that immunity to acts such as those at issue in this case, because such acts could never be the official acts of a government. Perhaps most important, in 1992, Congress adopted the Torture Victim Protection Act, which clearly creates a cause of action against individuals who commit torture and summary execution under color of foreign law. That statute makes no sense if officials are, by definition, immune from liability under the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act. So Congress itself assumed that there was no immunity when it enacted the FSIA, and the Torture Victim Protection Act becomes virtually meaningless if it's read without that assumption of no immunity. Petitioner's argument is based on a fear that without immunity, the floodgates would open to a host of claims in U.S. courts. But for decades, the U.S. courts have assumed that foreign government officials are not immune in cases such as his, which involve torture, summary execution, and similar abuses. And there has not been any such flood of cases. There also are many other ways to guard against ill-conceived lawsuits without rewriting the FSIA. Perhaps most important, most claims against government officials that don't involve gross human rights abuses do involve acts of state for which U.S. courts will not grant review. In addition, well-established doctrines such as exhaustion of domestic remedies and forum nonconvenience limit the number of such cases. Finally, the executive branch, of course, has the ability to request dismissal of cases that namely, as the Solicitor General argues in this case and has argued for 20 years, the absence of statutory immunity does not preclude the possibility of common law immunity for some government officials. In this very case, the Fourth Circuit remanded to the district court to consider this point for as a matter of first impression. The contours of any such immunity will, of course, have to be worked out in future cases. But such immunity would not apply here, as the executive branch suggests in the Solicitor General's brief, where we have a former official of a brutal government that no longer exists, who has been sued for torture and similar atrocities, and who has himself lived in the United States, subject to our laws, for many years. Thank you.